Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody had a blessed day so far and an awesome night. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of you saw the State of the Union speech, which we'll give you our take on that here shortly. But one thing I did want to point out that I thought this was very strangely timed is everybody's already seen this. A Amtrak train that was carrying numerous Republican Congress members and their family on the way to the West Virginia GOP retreat crashed into a huge dump truck, the ones that basically pick up trash cans, the huge ones. Apparently somebody had parked it and left it abandoned on the railway track, just ironically enough, that was taking all the GOP Congress members to this retreat. They were blessed, though, the Amtrak conductor basically was able to slow down slightly. It was still considered a high-speed collision. Basically trashed the truck, blew it everywhere. The train sustained some damage. Apparently nobody on the train was severely injured, some bumps, bruises, so forth. And the train actually did not derail. It was blessed that didn't happen. But I just found that to be very, very oddly timing, especially the way the Democrats acted last night of the State of the Union. I seriously felt like I was watching a first grade school where the kids basically got told they were not allowed to do something, and so they sat there and pouted in class and acted like little 5-year-old children. If I was a Democrat, that would have embarrassed me last night. I'm just flat out going to say that right now. There was some stuff, obviously, I know they don't agree upon, but the way they acted last night just showed you the absolute, complete, and total picture on how disrespectful and how unbelievably, almost just degenerate acting the Democrats did last night, refusing to stand up, refusing to clap, refusing to even acknowledge anything or even put a smile, these big sour frowns on their face, looking all angry like somebody just slapped them in the face. Beyond embarrassing for the Dems. But so I just thought that was very odd that the train thing happened this morning. But other than that, State of the Union address was pretty intense. Total nationalism, which I love. Absolutely very little talk, if any, on globalism whatsoever. Very, very good speech. Trump mentioned America like 80-something times, which was one of the highest amount of times that the word America or American has ever been used in the State of the Union speech. I was very excited about a lot of it. Few key things I wasn't too thrilled about, like I wish you would have addressed why the opiate epidemic is still exploding, not just why the pharmaceutical drugs have been caught into it, but also to us bringing in, or supposedly he could have said, we know there's other factions that are bringing in opiates into the black market in the United States, and we have to look into that. That would have been an incredibly great statement, but a lot of good stuff. What do you think about it, Deb?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I had somebody send me an email this morning, and they said that they felt like they were listening to a Hitler Nuremberg rally. And I said, well, I wouldn't go that far. He said, well, it was pure nationalism. I said, well, yeah, okay, I got that. I'm good with all that. But, you know, he basically did, you know, really galvanize the troops and basically admit, you know, talk about everything that he's accomplished in the past year, everything he's trying to accomplish. But like you said, he glossed over. He said he wanted to arrest all the drug dealers on the streets, but he completely ignored the fact about where the drugs are coming from, because he's trying to make it like they're pharmaceutical opiates that are being prescribed by doctors that are being sold on the street. That's not true. The number of people in New York City now that are dying from opiates are at an all-time high, and the number of prescriptions for OxyContin and fentanyl are at an all-time low. I mean, this is street stuff that we're having out there that's being sold, but like you said, Trump never addressed the fact that they're being brought in from Afghanistan. He should have said something like, you know, we're going to continue to, you know, work with, you know, getting rid of the opiate crops in Afghanistan. He could have said all that. I mean, there's 1,000 square miles of opium now being raised in Afghanistan. Never once was that addressed, because here's why. The Sabbateans, and I read this in this article a couple of weeks ago, they said they hold the world by its axis, and they turn it any direction they want based upon how they want it to be changed. So apparently what happened from a metadata analysis, they realized that they had really basically kind of overdone things a lot with Hillary and Podesta and Bush and the Nazis and all the other weird stuff those guys were involved in, Skull and Bones, and there was getting too much internet chatter and telephone chatter. Because remember, guys, they listen to every single conversation you have on your telephone, on your iPad, on your what you're watching, what you're listening to, everything. And what they do is they combine all of that, these giant servers, and they do what's called a meta-analysis, because nobody's going to listen to all this. But what they do, they pick up certain words like Podesta or Hillary or blood drinking or soul cooking or, you know, Zionism and all these things. And when it gets to be too much, it becomes a pinnacle point, and where you start to have what they call a tipping point, which we mean more than 10% of the population at any given time are directly talking about certain issues like this. They've got to change the narrative. So all of the stuff that they do to change the narrative is based on meta-analysis data. That's how they do this, because this is the energy field around the planet that they're trying to control, and the energy field around the planet is being controlled by what people are thinking about, speaking about, talking about, and everything else. So they want to make sure they can control the entire energy field. Now remember, guys, right now we're coming up to some big blood moons with the satanic groups, and this is going to be a peak time of their sacrifice. So just stay focused on what's going on. Somebody asked me earlier today. I talked to a bunch of really nice people today, as far as people asking me all kinds of questions that signed up for the, you know, the talk to Ted kind of thing. And it was really nice. One of the guys asked me, now, what do you mean by when you say stay frosty? And what that means is this. I apologize. I thought that was just a term that a lot of people knew. It means stay focused, stay alert, stay ready. Kind of like if you're outside and you're a little bit chill, but you're not really cold, and you're kind of like just focused, you know, frosty. You're ready to go, ready to act, ready to respond to something immediately. That's what that term means. So right now, while we're coming up to these high holy days of the occult again, I want you to really be careful with your children. You know, kind of, you know, put an extra arm around them when you're out in public with them. Kind of keep them from being out in the neighborhoods late at night. Make sure you know where they are all the time, because I don't want your children being abducted into one of these weird things that these guys are involved in. I'm speaking health and life to your kids. Just really, really watch them and be careful with them. Now, what was really funny is this representative, Luis Gutierrez, he was triggered by the USA chants. Now, when they were going, USA, USA, this Democrat, this Democrat had his meltdown, right? He's this big, illegal, alien-loving congressman from Illinois, where Chicago comes from, with all the drugs and with all the crime. He appeared triggered, okay, during the presidential Trump's last night rhetoric of the State of the Union, when everybody started shouting, USA, USA. He couldn't do it. He had to jump out of his seat as several Democrats patted him to console him on the arm as he retreated to his safe space. And I'm sure they had the Play-Doh waiting for him, and they had a puppy for him to talk to and to play with Austin, because he simply couldn't deal with this much nationalism and USA first. So I got a kick out of that. The mummy Nancy Pelosi, she was, as she always is, completely had no idea where she was. They point her in the directions. I don't think she even knows who was speaking last night. They kind of prop her in that seat, and they give her like a dialogue. Because remember, that man who controls the House pharmacy a few months back, we broke the story on this show, said that there were multiple members of Congress that were on Alzheimer's treatment protocols, and he was supplying the drugs to them. And I can pretty much guarantee you the mummy Pelosi is one of those people, because she acts like she does not know where she is. Quite frankly, I'm surprised they could actually keep her in her seat, unless they probably had her sedated last night, but she was just completely clueless. And all I know is this, the Democrats soiled themselves last night when he was talking about let's make America great again, and they wouldn't even applaud. When he was talking about let's have border control, let's work together across both aisles, Democrats with Republicans, let's work and get a border program and an immigration program together that works for both sides. No applause, no this, no that. And I will give Joe Biden, the boy they got, he got beat up during the campaign. I mean, literally beat up. You watch a video of him talking with a big slit in the side of his face where somebody took a punch to him. Watch Joe Biden. He was, every once in a while, he would sheepishly actually applaud for Trump. And then last night, while he was trying to be interviewed after the event, suddenly his microphone goes dead for about 3 to 4 minutes. No one could talk to him. Video, audio, everything went out. And what was interesting about this is, I'm sure that somebody had their little chit-chat with him, and the conversation with him and the doggone commentator wasn't going the way they wanted to, and they did not want him to say anything positive about Trump, because remember, they have to maintain the narrative. It's like I was told years ago that you can do one side or the other. You can be pro-Democrat, you can be pro-Republican, but you can't run down the middle and pick on both sides, because they don't want you to do that, because it confuses their Tavistock mind control programming. And it messes them up, because then people have to start thinking for themselves to make a decision on which side they're going to believe. And when that happens, they suddenly may actually reach some concrete rational thought and say, wait a minute, both these sides are lying to me. This thing is down the middle somewhere. So, guys, good speech last night. Nuremberg rally, as one of my friends said. But quite frankly, I wouldn't go that far. I don't think Trump's Hitler. I wouldn't say that. I think Obama was more of a Hitler than Trump was. But the thing about it is that God, whether Hank Williams said the president is Hitler, and we're talking about Obama, and they pulled him off of NBC or Monday Night Football. Remember that, Austin? And
oh, yeah.
I remember Carrie Underwood did a big spoof on that when she was doing the Country Music Awards, and I got a kick out of that. But, you know, it's the whole thing about it is, guys, here's the thing about last night I was watching TV and on Turner. I like to watch a lot of the old Turner movies from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s because they don't have a bunch of filthy language in them. And they had that Mel Brooks movie that was done back in 68, I think it was, with Gene Wilder. And I had forgotten how insanely funny Gene Wilder is. And it was called The Producers, and they had a thing in there they were showing. It was called Springtime for Hitler, was a play they were producing. And some of the parts of that movie and Gene Wilder was absolutely hilarious. Now people are saying to me, well, why are you thinking that's funny? Well, here's why I think that's funny. Anytime that the mainstream media wants to try to force a narrative of something that is really, really one-sided and biased in either direction, it doesn't make any difference, you've got to stop and look at what's going on, and you've got to think through it for yourself. And you've got to find the humor on both sides of the argument, and you've got to make a decision on how you want to believe what happened. Do I believe that Hitler was the absolute worst tyrant ever in the history of the planet? No, I believe Stalin was, or maybe Genghis Khan. You know, but of course, in current days, I would say it was Stalin. He killed 50 to 60, some people say 100 million of his own people. Do I think Hitler had some good points when he first got into office? Yeah, actually, I do. He was a nationalist, and he wanted to make Germany great again because he had gotten tired of what happened to him with the Versailles Treaty, and he also threw the Rothschild banking cartel out, I think it was in 37 or 38, and had a nook of that mess. So then he went bonkers, and went nuts and started doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Try to take over the world. That wasn't necessary. That's not something he should have gotten involved in. If he'd have just taken his land back that he'd lost in the Versailles Treaty, chances are the majority of the world would have never said much about that because they knew it was unjust to start with, and he could have basically avoided all of World War II and killing half the population of Germany pretty much, and pretty much doing severe damage to their DNA as far as the reproductive cycles and who was being bred and who wasn't being bred, etc. Because now Germany's turned into this giant country of complete and total wimp boys that allow Angela Merkel to do whatever they want to do, and they're all politically correct. Patsies, I should say, or pansies, I should say, or whatever they are. So, no, I don't like everything Hitler did. Absolutely not. But I can't say he didn't do everything right. I can't say he didn't do anything right, because he did some things that were right, including nationalizing the assets of the corporations that were stolen by the Federal Reserve System in Germany. Because remember, his big fight was against the international banking community and their control with the Rothschild banking systems. That was the big thing. If you listen to him and you watch PBS and you listen to some of the rallies, he said one of the times, and I've watched it on one of the PBS shows, if the international banking community insists on doing what they're doing and these sanctions against Germany, I'm going to basically retaliate against these guys. And that's a paraphrase of what he said, but that's what he said. And the thing about it is that we have to understand something. We are sooner or later going to have to deal with the same issues that he was dealing with as far as the international banking cartel. You think that the Federal Reserve System is going to go quietly into the night and say, sayonara, we love you guys, thanks for the trillions, we got to go? That ain't going to happen. It's not about the money with these guys. These guys are straight, hardcore Satanists. They're Luciferians. They're Sabbatean Kabbalists. These guys are absolutely set on bringing in a new world order, a one-world government with a one-world religion, worshiping Lucifer. That's their goal. And they're not going to stop. It's not about the money. They already got enough money. My gosh, they control almost every central bank in the entire planet. They're trillionaires. They can do anything they want. How many yachts do they need? How many Ferraris do they need? How many Rolex watches do they need? How many mansions do they need? They don't need money anymore because they print as much as they want whenever they want. What they want is control of the entire planet. That is what the primary, that was one of the primary things that the that Germany after World War One was fighting against. And sooner or later, guys, trust me on this, we're going to have to fight the same war over again against the international, communist, satanic, godless, Satan-loving, weirdo banking communities in the United States. Because if you think again that these guys are going to simply walk away from what they have and what they own in the U.S. and the control they have over U.S. the United States and Congress, it's not going to happen. They will crash the economy first before they allow you to do that, and they will take us to World War III before they allow themselves to be kicked out of the power structure that they've worked on so diligently now for the past hundreds of years. Austin, what do you think?
No, you're exactly right. And one of the reasons why the mainstream media and the liberals have gone so crazy after that speech yesterday is because it's everything that they're against. They are not for nationalism. They're not for family. They're not for a strong country. They're not for closed borders or for none of that. I saw an article earlier from MSNBC host Joy Reid, and she tweeted on this, and I mean, just got absolutely eviscerated. And this is what she said, and I quote, "Church, family, police, military, the national anthem? Is Trump trying to call on all the tropes of a 1950s era nationalism?
There we go.
The goal of this speech appears to be to force the normalization of Trump on the terms of a bygone era his supporters are nostalgic for." And I mean, she got eviscerated on Twitter. I mean, everybody was calling her out. They said, since when are things like church and family a bygone era? You liberals are some sick, ungodly, anti-family individuals. That was one of the comments somebody responded back to him. And I mean, I saw that, I said, really? Church, family, police, military, the national anthem, some of the core beliefs and core bases of our country? I mean, our country was based on a strong military. They were called the militia. Our country was based on church and being able to basically have, you know, worship God in your own way that you wanted to and not be told what you couldn't do. It was about family. It was about unison. It was about having everybody together in a area that you could support one another, that you could have families that were like-minded, that you could work off the land, that you could help one another about. That's what all this has been built on. This is what this country's roots deep into this soil have been based on for hundreds of years now. And these guys cannot stand it one single bit because it goes against everything with the UN Agenda 2030. There you go. That's what all the stuff comes
there
down to.
There you go.
The America, the nationalism, the church, the family, all that stuff they want disintegrated as quickly as physically possible, Dad. That's why I got a kick out of seeing all the Dems really squirm yesterday and get so angry when he was talking about a lot of this stuff. I was like, dude, there really wasn't anything that I didn't agree with. I just wish he would have touched base more on it and said maybe, you know, something like, now if he would have done this, I would have probably done a standing applause in my own house, even though nobody would have seen me. If he would have been talking about the opiates and the issues, and he said, and next what we're going to do is we're going to tackle the 10,000 metric tons of opium that are coming out of heroin and wipe out the poppy fields in Afghanistan so this stuff can't be grown. That would have been a mic drop. That would have been one of those. So just finish off with that. Just walk away. Done. Not even, nobody even knows how to handle that. And I really wish you would have said that, but it is what it is. So yeah, that's what was going on yesterday. Love the speech. Oh, on to some other news now as well. As you guys have seen so many times already since the Vegas shooting, the narrative has changed like 15 times now. The story keeps changing, the people keep changing, the timeline keeps changing, everything keeps changing, which is either means the FBI and the police department in Vegas are the most incompetent law enforcement agency in the entire country, or there's an agenda behind this whole situation, and I really don't think they're incompetent on what they want. They're now saying that the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and the FBI has now been caught up again in another controversy after they've now released the search warrants from October, revealing that the SWAT team witnessed Steve Paddock blow off his own head as they made entry into the suite. Whoa. Hold up. Here's what they said on here. The search warrant request on October 2nd states, As SWAT officers breached room 1305, they observed Stephen Paddock place a gun to his head and fire a round. Wait, hold on. Okay. First off, he put a gun to his mouth, supposedly, in the photo. Remember that? He didn't put a gun to his head, he put a gun in his mouth. Secondly, why are they now saying that this is what happened when they told us about 50-some-odd times that when they breached the room, he was already deceased on the floor? They said that over and over again. We breached room 135 with a SWAT team. As soon as we entered the room, we found Stephen Paddock deceased on the floor. Okay. He was dead when they came in. So now why all of a sudden has the narrative changed 4 months later, and why is still nobody addressing that another officer had a negligent discharge in the room after clearing the room? There's something else they still haven't talked about. This came out, 2 months ago, that there was a negligent discharge in the room 1305 by a police officer that shot his weapon. With a negligent discharge is when you accidentally shoot your gun. You don't mean to. You basically have your finger on the trigger and you pop around off. So what happened here? Did the SWAT team witness him blow his head off? If they did, when they breached the room and saw him with a handgun, why did they not engage him immediately? Remember, this guy supposedly just fired thousands of rounds into a crowd. The SWAT team is on edge. They are loaded for bear. They basically have an entry man. As soon as they breach the door, they have a first-team entry man. As soon as he sees anything that remotely resembles engagement of force, a firearm, a weapon, anything, he is to engage them with deadly force on sight. No hesitation, no less lethal, on sight. Ask any SWAT team. One of my best friends is on the SWAT team. The entry man is to engage anything that he sees and deems to be deadly force immediately. Reaction time needs to be like 0.1. As soon as he sees it, engages it with whatever they're running, probably ARs or MP5s. So now we're saying we breached the room, we saw him pull a gun out and stick a gun to his head, we watched him blow his head off, and then we all just kind of stood there with our thumbs in our mouth trying to figure out what was going on. I don't buy this for a single second. All they're doing now is they're trying to do damage control to cover up all the narrative that they've told us now, all the change in stories that they have done. Now they're trying to come out with this garbage. And again, still, like I said, why have we not seen anybody discuss why one of the police officers had a negligent discharge in the room? That's what I wanted to bring up today, Dad, with this, because this whole story continues to change literally almost on a week or monthly basis. And I thought this right now is one of the worst changes they could have done, especially after all the information that's already been released and we know to be true, especially from a SWAT team tactic standpoint.
Paddock was dead before the first shot was fired on the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
He's dead. And, you know, and then now, and suddenly they have hundreds of rounds discharged into the hallway. Remember, we heard that story, too. Mm-hmm. So now the SWAT team comes up, and there's bullet holes all over the hallway, and they're supposed to breach into this room now and stand there and watch the guy with the gun shoot himself. He would have been riddled with machine gun fire as soon as they opened the door and saw him with a weapon. This whole thing is – those guys just – it's a giant – FBI, CIA, Mossad, Saudi plot, just like 9/11 was, and it's basically unraveling around these guys, and they don't know what to do because they've got too many videos of helicopters firing rounds down onto the crowd, and they got too many videos of people saying there were multiple shooters, and they cannot contain the narrative. So the only thing they can do now is to put out multiple other narratives to continue to try to confuse the entire narrative so nobody can make any sense. This is exactly what they did with 9/11. Every time somebody would come out with a movie like 9/11 Mysteries or 9/11 Loose Change or 9/11 whatever it was, all of a sudden they would come out with another 25 different theories of other alternative people online to confuse everything, from space-based weapon platform systems, which could have been used, to nanothermite, which was probably used, to mini nukes, which could have been used, to the Compton effect, which may have been used, or the Hutchinson effect, which could have happened. They talk about all of these different techniques and things that could happen, and suddenly nobody has any idea what the truth is. It's all part of this confusion narrative that they do to try to make people go, who in the world knows what happens? Who cares? I don't want to hear another theory about what happened. Guys, again, Austin and I went to the gay nightclub a week or so after the shooting took place. fencing up in Orlando, and all of it, there were no bullet holes out front. They told us there was a big firefight out front, no bullet holes, and the cop told us that nothing that we had been told was true. And that when the final report came out, we were going to be shot. Well, guess what, guys? That's been a year and a half ago. The final report has never come out. It will never come out. And if it does come out, it'd be as big a lie as the Warren Commission report was with JFK or the 9/11 report. All a bunch of lies, all being controlled by the same group of people who run and work with the CIA and the narrative and the doggone Tavistock program and training. Now I want to read you something else. It kind of ties together with some of this. You guys know that Alexandra Bruce is a friend of mine. She came out with a really interesting email, and it says, How America Minds Got Hacked. Now, I love this. I'm going to read you this whole thing. It'll take about a minute. She says, I've been trying to figure out what might be peculiar about American culture that was driving the opioid, the obesity, and the depression crisis. Then a longtime subscriber sent me a video with Dr. Robert Lustig. That's Lustig is a German name, who totally is on case. He cracked the neurochemical, cultural, and economic codes of the country where happiness is legally enshrined as the foremost right in the founding document. Now listen to what he says. Lustig is a professor of endocrinology at UCSF, where he specializes in neuroendocrinology and childhood obesity. He's the author of The Hacking of the American Mind, in which he reveals a massive conflation that exists in America ideology and in the American consumerist ideals that have propagated throughout the planet between pleasure and happiness, which Lustig explains are completely different. I love what he says about this. Pleasure is short-lived. Happiness is long-lived. Pleasure is visceral. Happiness is ethereal. Pleasure is taking. Happiness is giving. Pleasure can be achieved with substances. Happiness cannot be achieved with substances. Pleasure is experienced alone. Happiness is experienced in social groups. The extremes of pleasure all lead to addiction. There you go. Whether the substance or behaviors, there's no such thing as being addicted to too much happiness. Finally, and most importantly, pleasure is dopamine and happiness is serotonin. Now listen to how he ties this together. There are two neurochemicals in the brain that makes and uses to communicate between one brain cell to another. It turns out that dopamine excites the next neuron, and when they're excited too much and too frequently, they tend to die. The neurons do. So the neuron has a defense mechanism against the dopamine. What it does is it reduces the number of receptors that are available to be stimulated in an attempt to try to mitigate the damage. That process is called downregulation, and a lot of different chemicals in the body do that. In other words, when you drink coffee, you get hit with it and you get all high from it, and then you keep drinking, you need more and more to do that. You get hit, you get a rush, the receptors get downregulated, so the next time you need a bigger hit to get the same rush because there are fewer receptors to occupy, and then you need a bigger hit, a bigger hit, and a bigger hit until finally you're taking a huge hit to get nothing, which is called tolerance. Then the neurons start to die. This is called addiction. This is what opioids do. Serotonin, however, is inhibitory. It is not excitatory. It inhibits the receptor to provide contentment, to basically relax, if you will. You can't overdose the serotonin in a neuron. It binds it. It doesn't activate the process beyond the receptor. It basically slows down the neurons instead of causing the fire up. And in doing so, you end up in the process of contentment or the feeling of oneness with the world or your happiness. Or now, I would stop here and say this. When you get to that point, and you have the righteousness, peace, and joy from the infilling of the Holy Spirit, you have that contentment that comes inside. Now, he's saying a lot of that contentment is based upon how much serotonin that you have in here. But there's one thing that downregulates serotonin, and that's dopamine, which is the hit you're taking with the drugs or with the coffee or the porn or whatever you're looking at. So the more pleasure you seek, the more unhappy you get. In Las Vegas, Madison Avenue, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and Washington, D.C. have very specifically and in coordinated fashion confused and conflated the term happiness with the term pleasure. So they're trying to make you buy happiness because they're confusing it with pleasure, and that's so they can sell you all of their junk. It's called the American economy, and it's based on hedonistic substances such as I have to have a new car to be happy. I have to do a new drug to be happy. I have to have new clothes to be happy. I have to have a fancy watch to be happy. And all of that drives pleasure and not happiness. In other words, you're triggering dopamine all of the time, which downregulates, which require more and more things to make you basically you know, to have happiness. Now, the reality is this, to have the pleasure. Ruthick describes simple things that support serotonin. Now, here's what they are. Sleep, mindfulness, exercise, prayer, and to reduce cortisol, which fights against serotonin. And we have several products that also do this. 5-HTP, also the multiple powder that we have that's phenomenal, and also cod liver oil. Those things work great as serotonin precursors, and they help you. But guys, you know, also says you need to have a low fructose in your diet, which also depletes serotonin, and high in L-tryptophan, which is a serotonin precursor, which is the 5-HTP, and omega-3 to support the serotonin. He's telling you the exact same thing that I'm telling you. But guys, here's what's funny about this whole article. When I read it, I thought how interesting this is from a biochemical standpoint, that basically people are looking at happiness and pleasure, and they're trying to figure out what in the world's going on and how dopamine and happiness are basically all tied together with serotonin. And I'm sorry, that happiness is tied together with serotonin, and dopamine is tied together with addiction. So guys, it's so important that we realize that when we become a Christian, we get filled with the righteousness, peace, and joy through the infilling of the Holy Spirit. Okay? So that's why we have to make sure that we stay right with God and we pray on a regular basis. We eat the right foods, we avoid the things we talk about, and we take the right supplements. Because again, if you have the righteousness, peace, and joy on the inside of you, you're not always striving for the next hit of dopamine with the next car or the next whatever you're trying to buy in order to maintain some happiness. It's something that's crazy, guys, because this pleasure and happiness thing, pleasure being the dopamine, the happiness being the serotonin, or the righteous peace and joy through the Holy Spirit, means a lot, because if your body doesn't get the nutrients that it needs, it's very difficult for it to produce the serotonin that it needs. But this makes sense why people constantly are trying to do a dopamine trigger. This is what aspartame does. Aspartame triggers a dopamine response in the brain. It's a brain entrainment molecule. It triggers because it's phenylalanine, aspartic acid, and methanol, which is paint thinner. And the aspartic acid has a specific trigger point in the brain that you need to have triggered when you drink aspartame, which gives you a dopamine kick. That's why aspartame is so incredibly addictive, and that's why you need larger and larger and larger amounts of the aspartame in order to get the dopamine. And the problem with that is it's an addictive nightmare roller coaster, and that's why it's so important to avoid all of those triggers that release dopamine and try to focus on the serotonin and the righteous peace and joy through the Holy Spirit. Because remember, guys, the world has not given us this peace, nor can the world take it away. It's through the infilling of the Holy Spirit, guys. And it's so important that we all understand that as Christians. Because, guys, if we don't understand that as Christians and we continue doing what we think the world wants us to do, or trying to find happiness with Madison Avenue and all the things that it talks about in this article, you'll never, ever find that. Because the world doesn't understand the peace that passes all understanding when you keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. It's absolutely important that we understand this. And one of the folks that I talked to, they gave me a Bible verse. I'm going to read it for you today. This is a great, great Bible verse. It's Romans 13, and it's 11 through 12. It says, "And do this, understanding the present time. The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber." I'm talking to all of my listeners. The hour, and you guys have already awakened. "The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light," which we all should be doing every single day. Let us behave decently as in the daytime, not in carousing and in drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and debauchery, not in dissension and jealousy. Rather, clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think about how to gratify the desires of the flesh, which are the dopamine triggers. Guys, it's so important that Paul says that we're content in all things and in all places and all times. And it also says that we're to enter into God's rest, which gives us that peace that passes all understanding. Because guys, why should we be up at night worrying about stuff? God's already up all night anyhow, and I promise you, He's got it under control. He's been running the universe since before you got here, before I got here, and He'll continue running it for all eternity. So guys, that's my word of the day. Austin, what do you think?
But that was excellent, man. That was a really good analogy, too, how you tied that in together as far as all the stuff that they have out west and Vegas and all that nonsense out there and how they try to tie in pleasure with happiness. And that's exactly what you see with so many people they run into, is that they're constantly trying to get more this, more that, more this, to basically make themselves happy off happenings. And so that was a really good analogy on that, man. That was excellent. But also, too, this is a little lighter note as far as an article I saw that really cracked me up today. I know you guys have all seen it now, basically the emotional support dogs, the emotional support animals. Basically, you can get an emotional support animal of any kind pretty much now. Well, United Airlines has recently had to deny a request as a lady demanded to bring her emotional support peacock onto the flight departing from Newark Liberty International Airport. They stated that the woman claimed she had a second ticket for the peacock. The airline denied her request. The traveler with the peacock were told they would not able to bring the peacock on board or to the airport. They said the animal did not meet guidelines for a number of reasons, including weight and size. They said, we explained to this customer on three separate occasions before she arrived at the airport, yet she still came to the airport and tried anyways. And there's a photo, and I mean, it's a hilarious photo, and I mean, I'm not talking like a small little like chicken sized baby peacock. I'm talking like a grown man sized peacock with like 4 feet of feathers hanging behind them. And I don't know if you guys, I got this picture when I was reading the article. I'm sure all of y'all have seen a peacock before when they spread and they start basically strutting, and they look like they're about 8 feet wide, and they get really, really big. And I just started getting this image in my mind of this lady with this peacock on the plane, and it getting spooked, or basically thinking somebody was trying to call it out, and it basically spreads its wings and starts running through the plane, terrorizing everybody. And I went, yeah, it's probably a good call. United Airlines told her she couldn't bring her emotional support peacock onto the plane now. But a lot of people do it with dogs. I've seen it on planes before with dogs, but a peacock, that was the first. I thought that was a pretty humorous story today, Dan.
And I'm not saying that people don't need emotional support dogs or pets or cats.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay? I mean, because sometimes they may actually need some of these. I mean, some of these people may be completely, you know, how should I say this in a nice way? They may be so distraught because of their life and because they don't know Jesus Christ. I'll say that very clearly, that they don't really know what to do or who to turn to. I knew a girl who, gosh, how can I say this without you guys knowing who I'm talking about? Back in the 90s, when I was doing the big seminar circuits with the 20, 30, 40,000 people in attendance at the time, I actually got to know some of the promoters in the seminars. And I remember Stanford Strong had come out with a video, and it was called Strong Against Crime. And you guys can probably still get that online. It's probably free on YouTube now. And he was talking about what you would do if you were ever involved in a home invasion. And I remember, I thought it was interesting because some of these people in the protocol that we were on were really high profile. And I remember one time I took that videotape and I gave it to one of the promoters. And I had, you know, and we were watching it with her. We were like all together in the room watching it. And after about 3 or 4 minutes, she turned it off. And she goes, I don't want to watch this. It's too negative. And I said, well, it kind of tells you what to do in case of a home invasion and what you can be prepared for so you can stay prepared. And she goes, well, that's never happened to me. Well, anyhow, these two, her and her husband moved down into the islands. And sure enough, about 2 years after they moved down to the islands, she had a home invasion. And after that home invasion happened, she was never quite right. But she really wasn't quite right before the invasion, but she really, really was really not right after that. And I remember she got one of those giant guard dogs. I mean, one of those 200-pound ones. It's like a dog that's the size of a bull mastiff. I forgot the name of it. I forgot what it was. I'm not even going to try to guess. And what was funny, she was going around in airplanes and in hotels and in restaurants bringing this giant animal with her. Now, what I would have done if she was that paranoid and they had plenty of money, just hire a security guard to walk behind you. Just, you know, that's what the Hollywood people do. Michael Moore, who says you should never have guns, guns should never be used, and basically they're horrible. He has security personnel that are fully armed with automatic weapons walking around behind him at all times, as does Hillary and as does the Gay Canyon. So all of these guys are telling you can't have guns, but they have all these guys protecting them with guns. So guys, I can understand when something really traumatic happens in a person's life that they feel as though they've got to have some type of support structure. So I'm not making fun of that at all. By the way, shocking memo to be released to the public. The FBI director Andrew McCabe was removed from office. No surprise here. Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe resigned before House Republicans voted in favor of releasing the classified memo that reportedly shows that the FBI abused the Foreign Intelligence Service Act, FISA, and they used the dirty dossier to obtain warrants to spy on the Trump campaign in 2016. Fox News reports that McCabe is named in the memo. Democrats lost their fight to prevent the memo from being released to the public, and I've also heard that several of these guys that are now resigning in the FBI have told if they do not, if they are not allowed to resign and get their full tenure and their full pension, that they will, quote, burn the FBI to the ground. Now, quite frankly, I'm a like, burn it. Let it burn and let everybody know what's going on. So what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not against that, honestly. I mean, obviously, I'm not, you know, condoning arson or anything like that. But on the other aspect of it, too, I mean, there's this whole thing is so ripe with corruption. I mean, it's the whole aspect of draining the swamp is a really, really true, legitimate analogy, and it really, truly does need to be done. This is something that there are too many people that are involved in every government agency, the FBI being one main huge one, but every aspect of it, including Congress, the Senate, all this stuff, that these guys have turned into essentially career criminals in these departments. And I'm not saying they're all like that, but what you have to look at it is when you have incidences like Waco, and you have the FBI, who nobody is even jailed, nobody's even really reprimanded, and they get away with that entire incident. It doesn't matter whose fault it was, who they want to blame. The fact that numerous people were not at least fired, demoted, thrown in jail, regardless, nothing happened. When you see incidents like this, it's textbook definition of, you know, a career criminal that has no oversight, that has no bounds, that has no regulations, that has no restrictions. They do whatever they want, whenever they want. And these guys stay in these positions for decades on end. They stay, essentially, I mean, you see with Congress, I mean, it boggles my mind that these guys can essentially stay in as long as they want, as long as they're reelected, and they get full retirement after 2 years. So they can do a 2-year term, 4-year term, they can dump out, and they can retire, I think it's like $186,000 a year for the rest of their life. Free health care, free security, free just about everything, and yet these guys essentially tell us we have to follow the law that they make, yet they don't have to follow the law. That's not at all what the Founding Fathers envisioned whatsoever. They designed it to be basically citizen patriots. You did your time. You went there. You did 2 years, 4 years, whatever you needed to do. You went back home. You worked. You lived your life. You supported your community. And that was basically a sidestep that you did and a side institute that you helped support was the government and helping basically represent your local people that you were trying to support. That's what this is all about. So this whole thing has gotten so far out of hand. It's a joke. And I mean, now they want to do more and more stuff to try to force as far as the surveillance aspect, everything. It's another crazy article from Ford now. U.S. automotive giant Ford has revealed its vision for the future of policing in a patent application, not for a cyborg, but an AI-driven cop car. And this is what a lot of people have been talking about for years now. Then this is the issue that I have so much with the AI that's being pushed with the autonomous vehicles, with all that. The proposed AI police car is essentially a speed trap, surveillance vehicle, and traffic cop all rolled into one. According to the pending patent published earlier this month, the vehicle would be used for routine tasks like ticketing and penalizing bad drivers. They said an autonomous police vehicle would enforce traffic laws by identifying violators, pulling over the offending vehicle, capturing an image of the license plate of the offending vehicle, and then determining to issue a warning or a ticket. Fitted with surveillance cameras, wireless communication capabilities, and sensors, the car could be on the beat with or without a human officer. The autonomous police vehicle may be trained or otherwise programmed using machine learning tools, deep neural networks, to find good hiding spots to catch violators of traffic laws. He even goes on to say at the end here, he goes, what we want is the depiction of the city of tomorrow that demonstrates the benefits of introducing these smart vehicles into a smart world for civic life. It's not about the city getting smarter, but about humans having a better day. I don't know how much stupider you can get with a comment like that last sentence. Humans having a better day. Yeah, because that's going to make my day just awesome, having an AI autonomous police officer pull me over because I'm doing 25 in a 15 mile an hour zone and writes me a ticket for speeding, and I can't even speak to anybody or file a complaint or get a badge number or even record the interaction with another human being. I just get a ticket from an AI and I'm on my way and have to pay my fine, or else they suspend my license and arrest me and jail me with a warrant. Yeah, that definitely is about humans having a better day. But this is really what they're trying to push with the Agenda 2030, Dad. And this is a nightmare. The fact that they're even contemplating they're getting a patent on this just goes to show you this is where the Agenda 2030 is going with the UN, with the smart grid and the smart cities and basically the AI police systems now, as weird as that gets.
Well, here's the funny part about this. You know, I guess it has to pull you over. I guess it has to chase you down on the highway and pull you over, because they can't really get a clean shot of you everywhere it goes. So they're making a vehicle, so obviously it's going to chase you down. So here's what I find funny with this. It's probably going to, knowing these guys, it's going to be an electric hybrid, which is going to be like a Prius. And so it's not going to have any power. It can't catch anything. So what if you're driving a Z06 Callaway Corvette with 757 horsepower and you see a little drone chasing you down the road? Are you just going to sit there and let it pull you over and ticket you, or are you just going to ease it up to about $120? Now, I'm not telling you to do this. I mean, what's the drone going to do? How's this AI going to calculate what's the risk and reward of chasing down somebody, whether it can even do that type of speed, and figure out, oh, by the way, this isn't really worth the effort of me chasing this down? I mean, how stupid is this, Austin? Like you said, they're supposed to give us a better day because of this. What a joke. By the way, Muslim man now in Pennsylvania, this is, I love this one, shoots a police officer in the name of Islam. But the mayor says the attack is unrelated to Islam. Now listen to this. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Edward Archer, a Muslim, ambushed and shot a police officer in the arm. After he ambushed and shot him. After he was apprehended, he said that he did it in the name of Islam and that he is loyal to ISIS. And that has made no difference to Mayor Jim Kenney, who said that shooting had nothing to do with Islam, though he said it did. Then he said that in America, Muslims are forced to defend themselves against hatred. So he ambushes a police officer who's doing nothing to him, and then he shoots the police officer in the arm, but he's defending himself against hatred, being a Muslim. You know, I don't know where these Democrats are found, and if somebody, like I said, dropped them on their head, or they've eaten too much aspartame or whatever, but this reasoning almost seems to me like it's some kind of mental illness. This, Austin, what do you think? Gosh.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it's headed now, as far as with this entire fascination and love a lot of these guys in the upper areas of the government have had for Muslims and Islam. I mean, we see it up in Minnesota. We see all this stuff now. It's like, it's not there. It's not happening. Don't think about it. If you pretend it's not there, the big pink elephant in the room will disappear eventually. So just nothing to see here. This isn't what it is. It's not what he said it is. It's not even what he's claiming it is. It's nothing. So just go away with it. The same aspect on how we still have not heard about the Somalian immigrant that turned into a police officer in Minnesota and shot the woman in cold blood who called the police over an assault that was basically happening in her alley. When she walked up to the police car, he was in the passenger seat. She walked up to the driver's window. He drew his weapon, supposedly, he didn't already have it in his hand, and shot her twice in the chest cavity, killing her on the scene. She was DOA when the ambulance got there. And yet we still have heard nothing about this. Of course, it had nothing to do with his Muslim beliefs or the fact that he was from Somalia or the fact that Islam completely disdains women for whatever reason. I have no idea why. We hear about this. No, still nobody's talking about it. It's not going any further. He's refusing to talk, and now they can't really charge him with anything. This is the kind of weird stuff that goes on with this religion, and it's so weird now because it's like, well, if it's Muslim, it's off limits. You can't talk about it. You can't prosecute it. You can't call it what it is. It's just, you have to pretend it doesn't exist and it's not there. We can't call it for what it is. Again, if anybody who's a nationalist or an American or, heaven forbid, a Christian does something, we get eviscerated before the facts are even on the table. Party. Oh, it's this fault. They're a neo-Nazi, and they're a Hitler supporter, and they're a nationalist, and blah, 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 blah. And as soon as stuff happens. So it's crazy to me, Dad, how we've reached this paradigm shift now where it's like an American citizen that wants to promote this country, that wants to support this country, similar to the speech that Trump did yesterday, it basically makes you a racist. But if you're a full-blown devout Muslim that loves Allah and you're doing this for ISIS and you claim that you're doing it for ISIS, well, that's not what it is. He wasn't a Muslim. It wasn't anything involved with Muslims at all. That's not what he meant. It's really interesting to see this happen now, but it's really quite sad at the same time.
Well, it's just, again, it's the narrative. Now, let me give you another one. You remember yesterday I was talking to you about how Planned Parenthood, and, you know, Margaret Sanger started Planned Parenthood, the Democrat. She basically wanted eugenics against the black population. She wanted eugenics and population control for the entire planet. You know, she's personally been responsible now for the death of close to 60 million people just here in the United States, not to mention all the abortion clinics that they've been involved with establishing around the world and around the globe. And I told you yesterday they're trying everything they can to reduce the population, and that Planned Parenthood is in the middle of this because it's part of their sacrificial satanic ritual rites that they do in the middle of their abortion ceremonies, which is what they are to these guys. Now, here's what they're doing now. This is really, really another one of these whacked out things that Planned Parenthood's involved in. Planned Parenthood is now going to be giving transgender hormone drugs to children. Planned Parent is expanding its business model. Here we go. I told you this was going to happen. It's all about population control by offering transgender hormone replacement drugs to minors, even though the majority of children who think they are transgender grow out of it when they reach puberty. Planned Parenthood received $544 million in tax money, taxpayer money from 2016 to 2017, which was used to cover the cost of 321,000 abortions, and the organization spent $15 million of that tax-paying money that you and I are paying for right now as donations to elect Democrats to office, and now they want to help facilitate young children 4, 5, 6, 7 years old in school to get transgender drugs. So the little boy goes up and says to the teacher, "Wow, that little girl really is cute over there. Maybe someday I'll be reborn, or maybe I'm a little girl too, because I want to be as cute as that little girl." Some little stupid kid, 5 years old, has no idea what he's even saying. "Oh, so you want to be a little girl?" "Yeah, I want to be a little girl." Suddenly, "Okay, school nurse, come here. Let's get Planned Parenthood on the phone. This little boy wants to be a little girl. Let's help facilitate that transition. Let's not bother telling the children's parents about this because it's none of their business, because this little boy has rights, and if he wants to be a little girl, he needs to be a little girl." Guys, this is the sick society that we live in, and these things are being done to these children without parental permission, including in many cases things like Gardasil shots and all of this weird counseling from these weird people in these weird classrooms who are a bunch of weirdos themselves who are trying to confuse sexual identity in these children. And that's why I like about what Trump said last night about the Bible, about the faith, about religion, about the United States, about nationalism. Guys, we've got to go back, because remember, these guys don't want my age, 62, Trump's age, 70, people around. Remember what I told you a few weeks ago? They're waiting for us to die. They don't want us around, but here's the mistake they made. "Greater is he who is in me than he who is in the earth." And guys, I'm doing everything I can in the training of my children and on this talk show to continue to promote the narrative that the United States is the greatest country ever put on this planet in the world, and that we're not going to succumb to all of this weirdo stuff and all this political correctness, and I'm going to fight it to every breath, every way I possibly can until the good Lord sees it time for me to go home. Guys, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm training my children to do the same thing, and you guys are going to be training your children to do the same thing, because guys, we all are in this together. I talked to so many fine people on the telephone today. You're my family. Everybody who listens to the show, you're my family. You guys are like our friends. You're like the people we pray for every single day. And we are in this fight together. And by the grace of God and God Almighty, we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us, including bring victory back to the United States. I'm not going to give up on this country, and I'm not going to give up on all of you guys who are listening to this show, because we are the ones that are going to change this country. I believe that with all of my heart, with all of my soul, and all of my strength. Guys, Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for praying for us. Thank you for getting your multiple vitamins from us. Thank you for being our friends. My gosh, thank you for being part of what we're doing here. I love you guys. Also, I'll do the write-up. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. God bless you guys, every one of you.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. Also, too, in more globalist propaganda now, the new piece was just released in Newsweek, of all things now, that accuses organic food campaigns of being a deceitful, expensive scam, quotes the author, Dr. Henry Miller, says that organic farming uses pesticides still, and that this form of agriculture is wasteful to farmland and water resources. It has disparaged modern farming methods. He goes on to say that he has a business relationship with Monsanto, there you go, and other corporations that they need help convincing the public that their products aren't dangerous and don't need to be regulated. EcoWatch claims that Miller has basically said that, and he's a fellow at the Hoover Institute think tank at Stanford University. You have to understand, guys, they despise the non-GMO, organic, pesticide-free food. They know how clean it is. They know how easy it is for the body to digest it. If you just want to do a simple test on your own body, which I don't advise you really to do this, but if you're curious about it and you're already eating GMOs, cut out, eat your regular food you're eating right now, the GMOs, all that stuff. If you're eating that, you got to do what you got to do, and go for just at least 3 to 5 days and switch over to full organic, low glycemic carbs, organic chicken, organic lima beans, organic green beans, organic sweet potatoes, organic eggs, and switch over to that for a couple days and feel the difference in what you feel in your body, in your cells, in your energy, in your mental acuity. And I promise you, every single time, you feel so much better. If you really want to do it, then throw in the ultimate multiple powder that we have or the capsules into that, and it'll completely change the way you feel in your energy and everything. So, and it's really, really important you're doing the best you can to eat as clean as you can. So we appreciate everything, guys. Thank you for all the support. Thank you for all the emails you continue to send to us. Product of the week one, B-Complex, one of our most popular products we have, our bioavailable methylated B vitamins on sale for over 10% off. And be sure to check out the other products that are on sale as well, including the Fiberlean, the Serenex, the Stress Control. All those we're putting up on the website as of right now that you can vote on. But the B Complex is on sale for over 10% off. So be sure to check it out, as it's a very, very popular product. And anything else you guys need on our website at healthmasters.com, we have it on there. Emails, articles, videos, all kinds of stuff. So be sure to check out the website. And if you need anything that you can't find, call us 1-800-726-1834. We appreciate it, guys. You have a blessed, safe, wonderful night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.